Hey guys, welcome back to the Spates Waterlad Podcast, the podcast which is of course supported by New Zealand's favourite beer. It's been awesome having Spates on board bringing you these episodes, and if you enjoy the podcast, when you can, be sure to support all of the partners that are behind Waterlad. Firstly, Spates. When you're making your next beer choice, make sure you make it a Spates. O Studio, if you're looking for a new adventure and the health and wellness space interests you, then make sure you give Tim Bateman a message at O Studio. He will change your life. And Pure Sport, if you suffer from aches or pains or even concentration or sleep, Grayson Hart at Pure Sport has you covered, and I promise you, you will not regret getting any of those products. Three of the great sponsors, grateful for all of them, and of course, if you want to be a true lad, go and get yourself some Waterlad merch. That is also another purchase you will not regret. Anyway, thanks for tuning in to another episode. Hope you enjoy this one. And what a lad I have for you today. Now, everyone I've spoken to about this man has said he is the best lad that you'll ever meet. He's someone who's had a very different pathway to the top than most. He was working in the Navy as his main job until he was picked up from the Cornish Pirates and given an opportunity, firstly with Toulouse, where he won the top 14, and since Northampton, where he's gone on to be one of the stars of the Premiership. Right now, of course, he's currently playing for a team that everyone's fallen in love with at the Rugby World Cup in Fiji, and I, like everyone, am very excited to see where these guys end up. So I'm super pumped and grateful for this episode. It is, of course, the great man himself, Sam Mutavesi. Welcome, mate.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the intro. I don't know how true. I don't know who you've been speaking to, but people are lying to you.
Mate, I'm doing my own research here, and you're one of the absolute greats.
I don't know about that.
Mate, but do appreciate you coming on. Like, I know you're in the middle of a Rugby World Cup, and you're obviously coming off the back of a win, first time against Australia in about 100 years. Mate, what was that like in the weekend?
Yeah, it's an unbelievable feeling. I think it's because, like every team going into World Cup in the build-up, like, we've worked hard. I think it's the hardest I've ever worked with Fiji in a Fiji camp.
True.
You know, that, I think that's due to the coaching, the management, the planning. But it's been awesome. Now, I don't want to, you know, I think it's a shock. People call it a shock because we haven't beat them for 69 years or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's a long time. But I think if you're actually in the group, it probably doesn't come as much of a shock, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think the boys are quietly confident, obviously very humble, but I think our biggest thing is how do we keep it up? I think it's obviously very easy to get up for Wales and Australia, you know, the first two games of the World Cup for us, but the biggest thing now is how can we keep that going for the next two games? So obviously the last World Cup, we lost to Uruguay. There's no disrespect to Uruguay, but we pushed Australia and Wales again pretty close.
Yeah, it's interesting you mention the shock, because you guys are now the number one ranked side in your pool. Probably the first time ever going into a Rugby World Cup being the number one ranked side in your pool. So how does that feel? Like, what difference does that make?
If I'm totally honest, I'd probably say it doesn't make a difference at all. I think for us, it's just, and it's going to sound very cliche, you'll know it more than anyone, it is each game. Like, I think we built up Wales a lot. I think we put a lot of energy into that, and rightly so. I think we should have got more from the game, personally. Mm-hmm. I think we played better against Wales than we did Australia. But, you know, it wasn't to be. But I think, you know, the week after, everyone backed it up and, you know, we beat Australia.
How hard was that to get over that Wales loss? Like, you could see the amount of effort and the energy that went into it. You could see the heartbreak when you didn't get across the line to finish. Was it hard to bounce back from that?
Yeah, it was. I think the best thing is it was the first game, you know, and you've got three other opportunities to win. But I'm not going to lie, I was pretty pissed off after, like, just frustrated. I think is the biggest thing, like, gutted, frustrated. I think when you play teams at like this level, and, you know, like, it hasn't happened in a long time, you know, if you get beat by a good team, you know, like, you can take getting beat by a good team. But I think when the margins are smaller and then some decisions don't really go your way, that's when it's tough.
Yeah, mate, 100%. And the whole world's sort of fallen in love with the Fijian side. Like, how's it in there? Like, what's it feel like being involved with that?
Yeah, it's I think it's amazing, but it's pretty normal. The guys are, you know, I think some stars in the team, but they're very humble people. Mm. You know, there's not much. I think if you got some food, some kava, and a guitar, some music,
yeah.
Everyone's pretty happy. Yeah. And that's pretty much as far as it goes. Like, I remember we beat England, and I was born in England, and you know, very much English/Cornish as well as Fijian. But I was watching. We were sitting in the back of the bus, and we've beat England, and we're stuck in traffic getting back to the hotel. And boys are playing like the game Killer on the bus, like most of them, and they're just like laughing. And yeah, I think it's crazy, you know, because like we had a week off after the England game, and everyone, I was like, you must have been on the piss 3 or 4 days. When did you stop? And usually I would be, but I was like, no, it wasn't. Like, it wasn't like that. We had a few beers in the evening, and you know, it was lucky enough that some of the boys had the families in the hotel, because I don't know if you've been to the hotel after a Fiji game, but there's Fijians everywhere. They're everywhere in the world. The Fijians come support, and so we have a rule: we're allowed an hour. We have to have an hour together as a team. So in the team room, we have an hour, just players and coaches, and then once we have some grog, have an hour, have a bit of a laugh. Then you know, you can invite people can come in as well,
and thousands come in.
And honestly, like, obviously we was in Saint Etienne last week, and yeah, it was incredible. It's just people, and you know, I think the great thing is, you know, you see old players, past players that you know come in, and you're just like, wow, I've watched you, or I've played with you, and then the Fijians and the Australian team all came for some cava, and yeah, it's great to see them. I play a fantasy league with the boys at Saints at NRL Fantasy.
Yeah.
I got a selfie with Bruno Valu and put it in the group and things like that. Like, yeah, unreal.
Oh, how good is that? And are you feeling the support from other nations, not just Fijians at the moment?
Yeah, I think we're everyone's second team. I think if your home nation isn't playing, everyone seems to support Fiji. And I think, I don't know how, it's amazing. You know, everyone's support is greatly appreciated. Mm. And I think I was born in Cornwall in England, and they seem to be all Fijian at the minute, all on social media.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool to see. And I did read the other day, like Semia Rajaratne was saying, that you guys are here to win the Rugby World Cup, which I don't know if that's a different mindset to what you've had previously going to World Cup with Fiji, where I felt like maybe being happy to make the quarterfinals, or that might have been a goal. But is there a different sort of feel going into this one?
Yeah, 100%. I think head coach, I think they could give the coaches a big rap, you know. I'm trying to obviously get the team on the weekend, but they've been unbelievable. I think the head coach, Simon, to Glenn Jackson, Daryl Gibson, Brad Harris, Graham Dews, and then the S&Cs, personally, I think they've probably made the biggest, they've put the hardest job and made the biggest change. You know, we've worked the hardest we've ever worked in a Fiji camp. And we had a session in Japan, which was probably the hardest session I've ever done. And that's on a Thursday before a game. And we're putting the graft in. And you can tell, you can see, you know, in the last 20 minutes, even against Wales, you know, just still be fighting at the end and try and get that last try, etc. We're right on the line. Now, I think for the coaches to be transparent, to be, you know, approachable, good, genuine good people, and to actually help, well, want to buy into the Fijian culture and, you know, get to know the lads a bit better, I think it's going really well.
Mm, that's cool to hear. And have you noticed a difference between from the Fijian players who have had a few years now with the Druid and Super Rugby?
Yeah, it's so much. Like, it's, I think there's more players from the Druid than there is overseas. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There's 18 Druid players, which is it's incredible. And I think, you know, you get messages like, "Who's that guy? Who's that? Who's that?" You know, cause obviously Super Rugby's on different times in the morning to the UK, and there's just I don't want to call them freaks, but there's just so many good players.
Yeah.
And I think that the Druid having an awesome facility in Fiji, a training facility. I think, you know, they're working on a training pitch at the minute, but there's just so much talent, as you know. And I think there's actually a pathway now of, let's play for the Druin instead of, you know, going overseas early and leaving the families and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that, probably 12 years, next 3 World Cups, you know, you might get every player, you know, from the draw, which would be unbelievable.
Yeah, mate, imagine that. That'd be a Super Rugby winning side, unfortunately for me at the Crusaders. But would you ever look to get to the draw?
I would love to. I'm just a bit old now. I think I'm I don't know if I would, for myself, my family, the kids, you know, then to actually live in Fiji would be one of the biggest, like, you know, attractions.
Yeah.
Just to say you've done it. Yeah. Now we went to the village, when we first met as a team, 13, 14 weeks ago now. And I was like, wow, like this is different, yeah. You know, to my upbringing in Cornwall to the village in Tavuni is different. And it was an amazing experience. I called my wife. We had to walk down the hill up onto the bit to get some signal. To call my wife, and I was like, "Yeah, it's different. I don't know if I could do this for the week. Just being an idiot." But it just takes you back to what my old man did, what his grandfather did back in the village, and how they grew up and seeing it. You know, we were 45 players and staff were in like the village hall, all on like mats on the floor. We'd eat downstairs, we shower outside or in the waterfall, toilet outside, brush your teeth outside, everything. And then there's a gym there, the pitch was there, and we train, and all the people from the village would come, they, you know, toot their horns, come up in cars. It was awesome. It was awesome.
That is cool. And you mentioned your dad there. So your dad is fully Fiji and he grew up in Fiji. How did he end up in England?
So he was playing for like the Fijian Barbarians, the Fijian Warriors at the time. This is like 80s.
Oh yeah.
And he did like a world tour in the late 80s, and they played like Bath, Bristol, Queens back in the day. And they went to Cornwall to play Penzance, obviously the Pirates, Penzance and Newlyn, it was back then. And they were the team that, you know, we ended up all representing, and that's where Josh is playing now. Our team Campbell and RFC, a local club in Cornwall, were, they were a good team at the time. They're a good team now, but they were like, "Oh, you know, would you fancy coming and playing a game on a Wednesday night?" And they were like, "You know, why not? Free beer, a few more pasties, we'll try it." So they played a game on the Wednesday. He's gone back to Fiji, and he got invited to tour South Africa with the same Fijian Barbarians. But he had a plane ticket come from Camborne, and he was farming at the time. I think he was a bit of a shitbag back in the day in Fiji. So he was farming back in the day, and then he got a flight over in the late 80s. So he went from the farm to the tin mine, like South Crofty mine.
Oh,
and you know, he was underground. I mean, and he was like, I think when he first went down, he was scared, because obviously they were using like explosive to blow it up to try and get the tin mine, and he was playing rugby.
Yeah,
and yeah, he obviously met my mum, fell in love, had 3 sons, and he's never been back to Fiji.
Oh, wow, that's so good. So then you grew up in Cornwall.
Yeah.
And what were you like as a little fella?
Shitbag. Absolute shitbag. No. We had a great upbringing. We played all sports, you know, rugby very early, cricket, football. And then, lucky enough for us, you know, all my mum's side of the family were very sporty, and everyone played for our local club, Camborne. So, you know, we all went to play for them. And my old man coached me and my older brother, and then my older brother's team, like, that they dropped out, they didn't have enough numbers, and he moved to the local rivals team, which is Redruth.
Oh,
so there's a big, like, rivalry, Camborne, Redruth, yeah. And so when my old man was like, "I'm not going in Redruth with you, so I'll go and coach Sam's age," because he's just a year above Josh. Yeah, so it was good. It was a real good upbringing.
I could imagine you three brothers in the backyard would have had a fair few battles going on. What was that like?
Yeah. Oh, we used to fight like cat and dog, me and Josh. Cat and dog.
What's the age difference between you two?
Is it 30 months, 40 months?
Oh, true. Bang, bang, yeah.
Yeah, it's close, yeah. I remember growing up, you know, we'd fight that much. We'd have like, okay, on a Monday, he'd have the remote. On a Tuesday, I'd have the remote. On a Wednesday, it was Joel. And then we would just like flip, because we'd fight over the saucy, like the kid, the small, like clothes and hide in each other's clothes, because obviously we're quite close in age. We sometimes have like the same friend groups.
Yeah.
And then I remember one time, like, we were getting a lift of cricket, and like one of our friends would come and pick us up. It's called Paul Menke. You're a great man. He'd be like, where's Sam? And Josh would be like, no, he's not coming. And I'd be in, like, waiting for the same lift, and then he'd just get in and go. Just things like that. I think until we got to college, where, because we went to the same college, and he's a year above, it's probably around college time, so what was it, 15, 16, that he like moved out, and like that probably stopped. But before that, it was every day, pretty much every day.
And it didn't stop till 15, 16.
Yeah,
that's no good for me with my boys.
And we were vicious as well, like vicious.
What was the worst buffo?
I think we got to a stage where we were at a local club just practicing with the old man, Joel, and we'd fight that much. Like, usually with the old man, he'd have to say a few words and we stopped because we were shit scared of him. But he would, this one time he goes, just fight then. You've been fighting that much. I've had enough. Go on then, fight.
Yeah.
And we both looked at each other like, oh, crap. So here we go. Here we go.
Who won?
Oh, always me. Always me.
Oh, that's crack up. But I do know, like, I have heard you speak about the passing of your mum. I think you're 13 at the time. So,
yeah.
Like, for you, that must have been incredibly tough for you to go through at that age. Like, you hear people going through, like, the loss of parents or siblings or something. But when you're actually in it, I can only imagine sort of what that's like. So how was that for you, and how hard was that for you to deal with?
It was tough. It was so tough. I'd go as far as say I probably didn't deal with it until like we were in COVID.
Oh wow, okay.
Like, yeah, that long. So yeah, I think you know, this is nothing against my dad and you know, our upbringing or anything like that. I think at 13 when it happens, I think for me, you know, you hide your emotions and you know you get on with things. Yeah. And my dad was very much of he was like, you know, I want us to get back on track. I think you should get back to school quite early, you know, and I think let's try and get, you know, not get on with it or move on, but let's try best we can to push through. And I think when you're 13, you know, you've got so many emotions and stuff like that. I just remember never really dealing with it or talking to anyone. I think the school were very good. They had someone that we could talk to, but there's no respect to him. He wasn't, say, as qualified as he should be. And I think it probably hindered me, because I just, not 13, but coming to like 16, well, 17, 18, when, you know, I'd get on the piss and just want to fight everyone, and all my anger and emotions would only come out then, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, for a lot of bad reasons. Now, during COVID, it got to this point where, you know, you were at home all the time playing, was it like quizzes and drinking. And I was just like, shit, you know, I need to speak to someone. And I was, how long was that? So 15 years, probably something like that. It was 16 years, you know, since it happened that I actually sought help. I wanted to speak to someone in Northampton who didn't know us in Cornwall, didn't know our story, and just be as open and honest as possible. But just on the point, I think because I couldn't quite grasp at the time that with our mum, she committed suicide, you know, for a lot of different reasons. And I think that's the hardest thing to take when you're, you know, it's not at any age, but let alone 13, when all you want is a mum and dad, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you just want quite, you know, answers, and you just want, you know, you want your mum, really. And I think, you know, this is going to sound terrible, but I think if she died, like, naturally, or, you know, I'm not going to say in a car, you know, if she died like where she didn't want to go, if that makes sense,
yeah.
I think you couldn't move past it better, but I think you could probably grasp it in your head a bit more.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Mate, it makes total sense.
Yeah. So I just want to, you know, take the opportunity now to, I think if you can talk to someone, you know, if you're in any state of, you know, talk to someone, there's loads of people out there that will help. I think, you know, friends, family, but people online.
What was that process like for you once you were speaking to the person in Northampton? Like, what did you go through once you made that decision to try and release it?
My wife was outstanding. So obviously, you know, I've been with her since we were like 18. So like, she's been through like the ups, the downs, the ins and outs, the emotions, the things like that. And I think it was just time. you know, we like looked at a few people and picked one, and we were just like, yeah, let's go for it. And I think the biggest thing was just is be as open. You have to be honest, you know, you have to be as honest as you can. And it's not nice. It's not nice being honest and going through things and, you know, about yourself, upbringing and everything. And, but yeah, it just helped me. And you know, he was unreal. He just talk and it would flow and it would, you know, I just come out feeling so much less stressed and pressured. And I felt a lot more like relaxed. And I think when I get as frustrated or amped up, and, you know, I think it just helped.
Yeah. And if you were in that position again, like, what would you have done differently if you could have gone back?
Oh, I would have, I think I would have said to my dad, I think I would have, you know, said, I need to speak to someone. And I probably, you know, back then, you know, not someone from the school, I think someone just totally away from the school and the situation and just talk. I think it would have been a massive help.
Mate, that's so cool to hear, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there going through something similar or a hard time. So it's powerful to hear that coming from you, and how you would have dealt with that, or how you did deal with it.
Yes, it's really tough. I don't want to say anything like my dad. I think in perspective, you know, he was over here with three young kids, and you know, none of, you know, he had my mum's family, but he didn't have his own family that to like fall back on. And he's, I think we're probably gonna, we'll push forward in this chat and talk through what he's gone through since then, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, you know, I think if he had his time again, he would have dealt with differently. But I just think people didn't really know back then, you know. Yeah. So, but I think, yeah, his way of life and how he was brought up was, you know, let's get on with it, and you know, we'll get through it.
Yeah. Oh, I was only looking at it the other day when I was looking at like my life insurance and just imagining like how hard it would be for our kids if either myself or my wife died. And it's a hard conversation to even talk about with my wife. She gets all emotional just thinking about me dying.
Yeah. So
it is a tough one to plan, and a tough one to, oh, I can only imagine what it's like to go through. So I appreciate you sharing that. And then what was your like pathway out of school like?
I had my headset of being an like electrician. I wanted to be a sparky. So the summer I left school,
did you?
Yeah. I had like pretty average grades. You know, I was always one of them that he could do it if he put his mind to it, but he was a bit too cheeky and loud sometimes. And so I left school that summer. I wanted to be a sparky. And the biggest thing in Cornwall at the time was Truro College. But Truro College is obviously, they've had, you know, some top players go through, like Jack Noel, Cowan Dickies, people like that. And that was like sort of, you know, the Exeter Chiefs and the Truro College was coming into play. And I got asked to go. I was like, nah, I don't really want to do that. Went on again. So I did the whole summer working as an electrician. And right at the end, before I was going to actually go to college and do one day a week as a sparky and then 4 days on site, I was like, nah, I think I'm going to go to college. So I ended up going to Truro College. went to Truro College for 2 years, and it was crazy, crazy, crazy. We had a good team. You know, we played every Wednesday up and down the country, and we were having a few beers at our local most Wednesday nights. So Thursday night zone, it was a pound a drink. Incredible. Oh,
wow, that is dangerous.
Yeah. it's shut now, unfortunately. And then I got asked to go to Exeter quite a bit, you know, week on, week off, and it was all looking pretty good. And then I just got on the piss too much, and they were like, nah, we don't want you. And I was like, whoa, shit. I'm in a bit of trouble there. And then it was sort of gone full circle. So I don't know if you would you have heard of Graham Dorr? English hooker, a bit of a legend in the champ.
Oh, no, not doesn't spring to mind.
Nah. Oh, if you want to get someone on the podcast, he'd be unbelievable. That's a different time. So I got recommended by someone in Cornwall to go and play for Plymouth Albion, because they were in the championship at the time, against the Navy. And I was like, yeah, I've got nothing to lose. I was working in a local bar in Camborne. I was like, yeah, I've got to go and play. Went and played, and he goes to me, well, what are your plans tomorrow? I said, well, I'm probably going back to work in the bar. He said, nah, I'll sign you. So I ended up I ended up going to Plymouth Albion. I think at one stage I was the youngest player to play in the Championship. I think I was like 17 in the back row. Shit. Yeah, and then I just sort of like went up and down from Championship, National 1, National 2. I couldn't really get a break. I wasn't really working hard enough, and I was like, in and out of jobs and stuff. And then my wife fell pregnant, and I was like, shit, I need something else because rugby's not really going well. I need a career. And in the meantime, you know, I'd been helped out by all the clubs in Cornwall, like Campbell, Medruth. They were really good to me, like helping me jobs, rugby, things like that. So then I was like, okay, I'm going to join the Navy. So I did that. I think I waited like 6 months to join, like something like that, from when I first signed up to get all the medical checks done to then join. Rugby was literally in the back of my mind. Like, mm-hmm. I genuinely didn't think I'd play professionally again. I didn't think I'd ever play for Fiji again. I wasn't really that bothered, if I'm honest. I just wanted to get in the Navy, try and work hard and do well and, you know, have a career. So I did my 10 weeks basic training in the Navy, my 12 weeks phase 2 training. Then I got my first post, my first draft down at RNAS Coldrose, which is an air station in Cornwall. You know, you're quite lucky because not many people want to move down to Helston in Cornwall if they're not from there or if they're a bit older, really. So I got the job down there, was working pretty normal, like 8 till 4 Fridays off, you know, football at lunch, things like that. I had to do a few shifts, you know, a few shifts here and there. And I get a call one afternoon and it's Alan Paver from the Pirates. And I was like, I'm surprised I got his number, but why is he calling me? And he was like, I'm not going to put his accent on, but he pretty much was like, look, we're desperate for a hooker. Our three hookers are injured. And I was like, Paves, I've got two problems. I said, firstly, I'm not a hooker. And secondly, I've just joined the Navy. I can't just come and play.
So you'd never played hooker at this point?
So I tried it for Plymouth when they got relegated from the Champ to National 1. And I tried it for like 2 weeks. I think, maybe a month. And obviously, if you get relegated in a team and you just move positions and you're not really playing, you know, it's not that good a recipe, if that makes sense, for success. So I was just like, okay. So he was like, look, we'll help you. We need you. Like, please come. So I went and spoke to my bosses in the Navy of where I worked, and Dean Jones and Adam Galatly and a few other people at Coldrose, and they were like, look, we'll keep it quiet. You can go for 2 days a week, go and train Tuesday, Thursday, but you've got to be at work 3 days. He said, this is off the books, you know, we can manage this. So I was like, okay. And there was literally no one else. So I remember I came off the bench at halftime against Jersey at home, my first game for the Pirates. And it was like quite an even contest, like Jersey, a good team. And I think I threw like six lineouts that we didn't win, like three were like to the left, three overthrow, and I go as far as say is it probably cost us the game. And I was just like, so I go back in Monday to the review, and I was strongly like, I was ready to be like, look, thanks Sam, but no thanks, like that. And it's the complete opposite. Like Alan Paver and Cats, Gavin Cattle work absolutely incredible. I think at the time with Paves, he goes to the forwards. We need to work hard. And I don't know, you obviously, you played at the Pirates, haven't you? Down at Menai. Yeah,
tough place to play.
Yeah. So you think the main pitch is obviously is kept quite nice, but the back pitch where we train, it obviously, especially in December, January, February, it's like a pigsty down there. And you know, he said to the forwards, we're going to work hard, we're going to do some extra scrummaging, extra mauling. And I think the boys were like, Stan, you prick, why have you come? Why are we doing this? And so that for the half a year that I then played, you know, he fully backed me. I played most games. And I think, you know, to move to the front row, to learn to throw and to actually do it, the best thing is just being in it to learn. And, you know, you probably learn more when things aren't going as well. So that was the 17-18 year. Yeah, now the 17-18. Now the 18-19, I'm back in work, and they're like, okay, you can have a bit more time. I've got like 3 or 4 days now. I'm pretty much full time at the Pirates because in the day, you don't work on a Friday. So, and you know, I had a full pre-season. Things were going well, and I got picked for Fiji for the first time in 5 years. I got picked again in 2018, and we lost to Scotland, beat Uruguay, and beat France at the Stade de France.
Oh, how good.
Literally, and then obviously I had a few beers that night, and I've the next, you know, and the next day, Sunday, I got on an aeroplane back to Cornwall, in with the Pirates, and at this stage I'm sort of playing 3/4 of the year for the Pirates and the last quarter for the Navy, because obviously that's when the Navy fixtures come about, and that they were like, you have to play for the Navy, which is perfect. So we've cut a long story. We've played the RAF at Harlequins on Friday night, and I get a call. You're off to Toulouse tomorrow. Toulouse want to sign you as a medical joker. They've seen your game against France.
Oh, true.
And I was like, shut up.
Who's that who's called you?
My agent. Oh, I was true. Like, you've been drinking, Stu, or what? What's going on? And he's like, seriously. And the Navy were, well, the Navy are incredible. The people in charge of the Navy were like, look, we can't really do this because you're not insured, you're not covered, you can't just go to France and play, but we'll let you, but you're on your own, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's no disrespect to the Pirates, but I've gone from having to buy my aftermatch shirt at the Pirates to then being like, I'm getting socks and pants from Eden Park at Toulouse. what's going on? Yeah. And I've walked in the change room. They've got Dupont, Antomac, Jerome Kino, Cheslin Colby. Yeah. And it literally was, and they were incredible. And it was tough because I'd be on the bench, come on, do okay. Come off the bench, come on, do okay. Then I'd have to go back and play for the Navy.
Oh, yeah.
So it sort of like interrupted it. But it was, the experience was absolutely unbelievable. You know, something I'll have with forever. So after that, the Toulouse, We have a very good night out, a very good couple of nights out in Paris.
Yeah.
Like, unbelievable.
Was it?
I think we had our own like private plane to up to Paris. The place we stayed before, incredible. We had a few beers before because we weren't playing. So like the coaches and the players that weren't playing went out for a few beers. And then obviously we had to warm up, you know, the next day, but everyone was fine. You know, I'm in the Stade of France warming up, you know, about to watch Toulouse to Clermont. And, you know, there's a massive, massive do in the middle of Paris after, like, unbelievable. We're going, we're me, Richie Arnold, Joe Tacori, Carl Axtons, we're following William Servat around France. And obviously everyone knows him.
Yeah.
And we're going to these random bars, just like, oh, it's just incredible. And then, wake up the next day, we get a private, we're on the plane back to Toulouse. People are doing like the skydives, the tray that's been usually pushed around, which is free for all, just like help yourself.
Yeah.
Getting to like, and yeah, like I've gone from playing for the Pirates to playing for the Navy to then doing an open top bus, you know, in front of thousands and thousands of people in Toulouse.
Man, what a story. It's crazy, eh?
Yeah. I was like, I've still got a wife and kids. I need to get home. So I go home the next, so Saturday, Sunday. I go home on the Monday and I'm home for a week. And then I fly to Fiji for the World Cup prep. So another 4 months away.
Oh, so,
yeah. And last World Cup in Japan, incredible. I got to do it with my older brother. And then when I come back, I will come back to the Pirates. I can't get in the hooker position because I'm playing back row for the Pirates, and then I end up signing for Northampton.
All right, that is so crazy. Was it hard to learn the hooker craft? Because obviously, you don't often see Lucy's go to hooker and that sort of transition to how work that quickly.
Yeah, it was. I'll be honest. I prefer the scrummaging. I love it. People here are like, what is he on about?
Yeah. But
you don't appreciate how good props and hookers are, obviously, unless you actually you're in there and you know, you're figuring it out yourself, but it's an art form. It really is an art form, and it's incredible. You know, I love watching, like, I've gone from a bit of UA to love watching scrums and stuff now. But it's like the throw-in's tough, because it's like the scrum as well, but people, if you see a bad throw, you just think it's the hooker, where obviously there's a massive amount that goes into a lineout, the movement, like so much stuff. But people just think if you ever threw bad throws, oh, he can throw shit.
Yeah.
But it's actually, it's obviously such a close skill. Like, I'd rather scrum than throw.
Yeah.
You know, I've got better now. I think, you know, Northampton have been unbelievable, but, you know, helping that along and trying to get better and things like that. But it's quite nerve wracking.
Yeah, I bet, mate. It looks like it. And is it just reps that get you there? Like, is that the only way you can really train it?
Yeah, I think it's reps. Because obviously everyone throws differently, everyone holds a ball differently. But it's reps. It's doing it under pressure against people. I'd say that any young hookers that, you know, probably haven't got the tools, it's really tough, because people just pick a target and just throw constantly at a target. But, you know, you need to factor in things moving. You know, you want to come, like, targets moving forward, moving back, you know, like, loads of different stuff. But yeah, the throw has been a hot, I think it's more mentally as well than it is actually doing it.
Hey, it's interesting. And when you signed with Northampton, was that the only option, or did you have other options coming at you? Like, why Northampton?
Yeah, I had a few options. I think I spoke to Chris Boyd. And I liked how he spoke. I like how he was trying to play. But when I signed at Saints, you know, I pretty much knew I was going to be third, fourth choice, if that makes sense, just to, you know, get the opportunity to have a crack.
And was that what it played out like?
At the start, yeah. Obviously when a new player comes in, I was on the bench for the first two games, got a start, went really bad, and then another 4 months, and then that was only due to injuries and, you know, other form, I'd say, to get an actual five six games on the bounce where you can show what you can do.
Yeah, no, 100%. Because it's been such an interesting ride for you. Eh? Obviously, you were talented. You love the piss, sort of held you back.
Yeah.
And then you get these opportunities slowly, and then you're obviously taking them throughout the ride, and then all of a sudden you're a pro footy player. Did you ever think you were going to be a pro footy player when you were at the Navy?
Nah. Not at all. Even before that, I think, like, you know, I'm not saying I was, you know, Richie McCaw, but I had a bit of talent, if that makes sense. You know, I was a bit talented, but I think it was having kids that was like, okay, like, life's changed now. It isn't just you.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to do a bit more. And yeah, it's probably since like 24 onwards. So from 24 to now, if you were like, did you work hard for the, I could say, look in the mirror and say, yes, you know, I've worked hard, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
From 24. Now, if I wasn't an idiot, I could have done it at 17, 16, 15. It would have been, you know, who knows what could have happened.
Yeah. Mate, it's crazy, yeah. And was there any pressure from, obviously, Josh had probably become a pro already by then. Did you ever compare yourself to him?
Yeah, I think it's because we're so close in age, and we've grown up playing. I think we sort of flip reverse now, because like I was never jealous. I was always proud, but I always wanted to be where he was, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then like on the flip side of that now, you know, I'm FaceTiming him every day. How's it going? How's Cam? And he's wearing all the Fiji kit I've just given him, so he's probably pulled into it. But so in the England game, he brought his wife and his kids up, my nieces, and they sat with my kids at the England game. And I just think to have Josh around, and I think you know he was proud, if that makes sense. You could see that his you know, how proud he was in the team in Fiji and in myself was awesome.
Yeah, that is cool. And you mentioned that you played the last Rugby World Cup with him.
Yeah.
And the one in Japan. Like, what was that like?
Unreal. Like, we got on so well. Because obviously we've never, since we were, like, say, he left it. So he went to college and he, like, boarded. So, like, 15, 16, then on to in the next 10 years, we haven't been in the same house under the same roof for, you know, more than a week. Yeah. So, and then we've gone to the World Cup. And then I think after the first bit of training, we've roomed together. So the whole of Japan, I think even before that, we roomed together.
Oh, true.
And I said to my missus, I was like,
you're going to be scrapping.
This could go one or two ways. Honestly, and we got on. So I think you grow up a little bit, don't you? And yeah, we got on really well.
And how did that World Cup compare to where you are now?
I think that World Cup, I think Colossi, like, is my first World Cup. I'm still pretty new to the team. I'm not going to say I was just happy to be there. You know, I still wanted to do well, but. Like for Josh, for instance, you know, he was one of the senior players back then, but then I was the one playing every week, so it was like our room was like quite mixed, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But he was incredible. You know, he always pushed it in training, like drove standards. His attitude was good, so it was good to see that part as well.
And what's it like being in that Fijian team? You've spoken about it a little bit already, but being in that side, like, can you speak Fijian?
Nah.
Do the boys mainly speak English, or do they mix it up?
Nah, they mix it up. Like, I think because I've sort of been around a little bit now, they just sort of accept me. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're like, come on, who's this idiot? Who's like, but there, I think, you know, if obviously we're in a hotel in Bordeaux, if you're someone from the street that would walk into the hotel, you'd be treated like everyone else. You know, they're that sort of people.
Yeah.
It's the environment's incredible. It's a happy environment. You know, there's nothing's ever too much problems, or nothing's, well, we need this and that. If that makes sense, yeah. You know, we're usually pretty good with what we've got, which is, I think, is incredible. At the minute, it's a happy camp. I think a very happy camp.
Mm. And the Fijians are always generally pretty religious, and it's part of their sort of week. And process. Are you religious? Is that all part of the setup?
I wouldn't say I'm as religious as some of the players in the team. Quite openly. So we pray every day. We call it Lotu. It's like a church. So we have that every day in the morning. So we'll have it tomorrow morning, 8:30 in the morning, and that usually goes on for 15 or 20 minutes. But there'll be a hymn in there. There'll be a Bible verse. And you know, there'll be some collective about praying and stuff. And that isn't just for the players. All the staff buy in, you know, into that. Everyone that's here with the team is in on the Lotu. Yeah,
no, that's cool. Eh? It's such a unique environment compared to like other sides around the world.
Yeah, it's incredible. I think that, you know, this. I think people are starting to see it online. Obviously, you know, phones, and everyone's got a phone and camera these days. But everyone's like, oh, the Fijian, the singing. Yeah, we probably sing about 15 times a day. So. That's why we're not too bad.
Can you sing? Because they are good singers naturally.
No, terrible. I'm the one looking at my phone for, who's put the lyrics in the group? Who's put the lyrics in the group? No, but it just be like, I think the other day, Frank Lamani, he put a song in the group, like the lyrics. And so for the next 2 days on the bus, he was like, cut the music. We're going to practice this. To be fair, it sounds unbelievable.
Yeah, I bet.
Like, but like, so for the next 2 days, that like there wasn't any music on the bus. You know, any after training, we always sing, we do a hymn. So that was a hymn after, so the boys can get used to it. Yeah. So things like that.
Mate, so cool. And what about the haka, the Finbi? Yeah, how do you go at that? Or how hard was that to learn?
No, it was
a little bit easier than most.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. I think it's like I'll be pretty honest with you now, the national anthem was in English until the last few games in the World Cup. So I've had to quickly look over that.
Oh, yeah.
And practice. But yeah, the Finbies are, I've done it a few times now, so it's not too bad.
No, you'll be right up the front.
Not a chance. Not a chance. In the back hiding somewhere.
Oh, that's so cool to hear. And what are your plans going forward for footy? Obviously, you got the Rugby World Cup you're focusing on now, but post that, what does that look like for you?
Yeah, I've signed for Saints. I've got this year and next year. You know, I'm happy at the Saints. Yeah, great club, great people. I think after that, who knows? You know, family's still young. You know, maybe to experience a different country or you know, a different culture, if that makes sense. I'm not too sure.
How old are your kids?
7 and 6.
Oh, true. Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, and I'm also in the Navy, so I'm trying to trying to get things all together at that, you know, trying to work that out.
Yeah.
Which is exciting.
And is that something you'd look to do post-footy? Is that sort of your plan to get back into the Navy?
Yeah, they've been really, really good. Really good, really helpful, really about pushing and you know, excited for what I've been doing. But I'd love to go back in some capacity and do some recruitment, you know, be around schools, colleges, and say, join the Navy. It's a great opportunity to see the world and play sport. Hopefully that will come to fruition. And then obviously like the Army Navy and the Army, the sport in the Navy is massive. So I'd love to be involved in the rugby side of it for, you know, for a while, see how it goes.
Is it full-time gigs for like coaches and stuff for that Navy rugby side?
Yeah, so it's all in the Navy. So everyone, like obviously everyone's employed in the Navy, so they're serving in the Navy, and then they'll get a few months off a year to be it. Yeah, but the environment's incredible. It's like a full-time environment, you know. So you're like a rugby player, but you're in the Navy, but yeah, you're doing like a rugby schedule, if that makes sense.
And I am keen to hear a little bit more about this whiskey that I'm seeing all over the show, selling globally.
It's lucky you said that, because my wife and my, because it's myself, my wife, my two brothers, their wives, and a business partner from Northampton. So we've got a rum, a spiced rum that we've bought out very recently, and they were like, "You've got to plug it. You've got to mention it."
Mate, I saw it. It looks unbelievable.
Yeah. So we wanted to do something as some brothers that are, you know, playing rugby and, you know, in this environment for a little while. And, you know, we talked about doing cloves or this and that. And then someone mentioned gin, and that was like, it's sort of been, everyone's done it. And then they're like, rum. So we're like, okay. And it for 6 months, it's sort of just a conversation. And then we talked to someone who like accelerated it a lot. And now we've just sold out of all our first edition.
Oh, mate,
so already sold out. Yeah. Which is incredible. Huge. Support's been amazing, yeah.
And it's a big process, that too. I like obviously looked into making my own beer and my own spirits as well. And there's a lot to it, a lot behind the scenes, and it is a hard market to make a buck.
It's real tough. I think it's just the learning phase of, you know, you need to register a company's house, you need to get the tax stuff, you need to do like, and you're just like, what, you know? And I'll be pretty honest, the wives have been incredible. They've really kicked it on and kick-started it. So they deserve all the credit for it.
And where do you see it? Where do you see it going? What's the ultimate plan?
Well, I think the ultimate plan is, you know, we have it in Tesco's and M&S and Asda and shops, you know, and it's there the whole time. I think we'll say we've had a crack, we've had a bit of a fun adventure. I say fun, it would be a bit of an adventure that is different, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely things that we've learned along the way that we wouldn't do the same next time, et cetera, et cetera.
Massively, yeah. I love that mindset, because it's so true. Like, yeah, give something a go. If it works, you keep doing it. If it doesn't, park it and find something else, because what you would have learned from that experience that you've done setting it up would be, you'll learn so much, and you'll be able to move that into whatever you do next. But looking at it from a distance, I can't wait for it to hit New Zealand shores. It looks incredible.
No, it's awesome. It's an awesome thing. Awesome. I think you should buy one, definitely.
Oh, definitely, mate. I'll buy a truckload and start selling it from my garage. Be your main distributor from New Zealand. But do you still get angry when you're on the piss, or is that all settled down now? You're a calm man. You go all zen.
Yeah, obviously, like anything, you know, other things will piss me off. But no, I'm pretty calm. No, I'm pretty calm. I think as you get older as well, you know, the times of hitting it every weekend and going as hard, it just takes too long to get over it now. So yeah. I think if you beat England or Australia, it's, you know, you've earned a beer. So, but other than that, it's pretty much, you know, wake up, get in the ice bath, get your recovery done, and get ready for next week.
Yeah, mate, you're right on. But there, I know there is one thing that does obviously make you mad when you've had a few, because I have gone to the Instagram for some questions. Millions came in, and the first one is, what are your thoughts on women using the men's toilet in the, when their line is too long?
Dude, that is incredible. That was when it was on the piss and the shit, and obviously in Wandsworth. And I was like, if I walked into your toilet and took a piss, there would be hell up. I was like, get out of our toilet. And people were just like, well, it's fine. I was like, no, go in your own toilet. Cute. Like you shouldn't be in this one. And it really, and obviously I had a few, but it really pissed me off at the time.
Oh, that is good stuff, Kay.
Who sent that one in?
That was Richie Ives. He's been on the Metavasi camp for a long, long time.
he's a top man. Him and his wife, yeah, are absolute legends.
Champion, eh? Yeah. Okay, next one. Who wins in a one-on-one comp out of you, Josh and Joel?
Oh, yeah, I'll take that.
You've easily got them. Got them covered.
Yeah, at the minute, I'd probably go me, Joel and Josh. Josh is retired now. He's in retired mode.
Oh, I like it. Okay, next one. How would you approach tackling to a sova? That's a tough one.
I'd point and shout, he's yours.
Mate, you guys have some tough guys to tackle. Who's the hardest? Who would be the hardest guy to tackle on your tight side?
He'd be close. We at the minute, we're trading hard. So we've pre-World Cup, every Thursday was four blocks of 12 minutes full on. And, you know, I think the second and third game, Tui Sova didn't play, he didn't start.
Yeah.
But he was in the opposition. And it's like off the back of a line out, and you're like at the tail. Oh, who's coming in the seam? You're like, fuck, you know. You don't want to look up and spot that. And then there's a few. There's obviously Mata to Albert Tuisui, second rows. Then you've got Mbossi. I could name only 10. I think it's get low, get in front, and hope for the best.
Yeah, it must be fun to play with though. Those guys, you know, following them in support, like offloads or tackle breaks coming.
Yeah, like, not being funny, when you get up from a scrum and then you got someone going under the post, it's quite a nice feeling.
Yeah, oh, mate, good stuff. Okay, next one. Biggest change that he's seen in the forwards being able to match at set piece time now?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it's the staff who you have. Do you know an Alan Muir?
I do. He does ring a bell. Yeah.
Alan Muir is a Kiwi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I go to as far, it was, I'd say it was him and Campo, Campesi Mafu.
Yeah.
Campo, the legend Lucid prop that Fiji have had. I think it was them that started the mold of, you know, let's change it. Let's change the perception of just being, you know, a flair team and not having a set piece. And I go as far as to say it was them that started it, and there's just, you know, people that have come in on board and helped out along the way. And I think having players playing at the top level in Super or in Europe has definitely helped that.
Yeah, you can see it, eh? Like now at set piece time, was always a big question mark for you. Can you win your set piece to give, you know, the backs and your dangerous runners the ball that they can just do what they want with? But now you can compete at set piece, and now they are getting that ball, and it's good to watch.
Yeah.
Even your kicking game, I've noticed like big changes in your kicking game, like both from 9 and 10. Has that been something you guys have really focused on?
Yeah, I think, it's the thing's changing. Like, you'll probably see, you see that at the start of the World Cup, France and New Zealand kicking a lot more and things like that now. I think Jacko and Dale Gibson, you know, we want to kick, you know, we're on the pressure sometimes, you know, we want to release that pressure, but let's kick, you know, when we want, let's just not kick for the sake of kicking.
Yeah.
Now, I think, as you probably know, you know, our first mentality is if it's on, we'll go. Well, we won't. The backs will have a go. And you know, if we can create a one-on-one or, you know, get to an edge, we'll definitely try. But if not, I think you have to, in the modern game, you have to have the capability to you know, box kick, you know, kick, find some grass or you know, kick high to, you know, compete. But it's all changed. Yeah, I think if you want to win the big games, you know, you have to have a kicking game, don't you?
Yeah, massively. And obviously, you would know more than most playing over there in Northampton, although you guys do play a slightly more expensive style of footy than some of them over there.
Yeah. I think our attack coach is unreal. Sam Vesti, I don't know if you came across him, but he's outstanding. He's pretty similar as well. Let's have a go.
It is cool to see. Okay, next one. What's your favourite F45, Jim?
Oh, very, very good. That's a big tease at that, didn't he? I don't know. There's not many F45s where I am in Northampton, but he should do himself a favour and get him one, probably.
What's the joke there?
No, I can't.
Okay, next one. Is it true he's the only Cornish Fijian?
I'd say there's myself, Josh, and Joel. So yeah, I'm one of three. Yeah.
Now the whole city's behind you, or the whole town's behind you now, aren't they? They're all Fijian.
They are. They literally are.
Okay. Next one. Is his old teammate Dan Bigger as competitive as he seems on TV?
Yeah. He's. I think like you'd have experienced it with tens and stuff at teams. He demands, you know, the best. And I think he's someone that he doesn't care if you're the best player on the team or the youngest player on the team. You know, he will give as much shit to the player that ultimately is, you know, not mucking up, but probably shouldn't be where he is, or if he's had too much, you know. And I think he's outstanding for a team. But I think what people don't see is off the pitch, he's probably one of the best people you'll meet. He's got a terrible fashion sense, but he's a great bloke. Terrible. He's still wearing jeans and like his jeans and free trainers now. Yeah, how much cash he's got is scary. But he's a top bloke, like one of the best.
Yeah. Did you ever cop a spray from him?
I've had a few looks. You know, when like I remember we're doing a walkthrough. So with at Saints, we call it like we call it Tai Chi. So we're just walking through like an install.
Yeah.
And I'm like my mind's like right. I'm laughing with someone else, and like I think I we'd like he's like, going to go through everything, and like okay, so like we've done an exit line out. We're going to go to 22 to do another line out. And I didn't hear what was going on next. So, like, I box kicked it, pissing around. And he's been like, what the fuck is that? You know? And I was like, what are you fucking shouting for? I don't know what's going on. But, yeah, he's giving everyone a spray, 100%.
Does he even spray the coaches? Or what's that sort of relationship like with the coaches? Or is there a bit of a barrier there?
No, I wouldn't say he'd spray, but he would definitely challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I think if you've got 100 caps for your country and you've got the experience he's got, you know, he doesn't do it to belittle. He's not trying to belittle people or that, but he'll definitely have a, if he thinks something different, he'll say it, which I think's unreal. And I think a lot of the players that I think are playing with him now in France in Toulon, that, you know, people that have played with him at Saints, you know, he's a great player. He's a great person, but you know, he gets like that. But I think it's good. I think teams need it.
Yeah, I agree. And that's cool to hear. Good to get a little bit of an insight there. Okay, two more. Best player that you've played with?
You can't look too much further than DuPont, can you? DuPont's pretty good.
Oh, of course. Yeah, Toulouse, DuPont. Mate, he's incredible, eh?
Oh, freak. Like, just, yeah. I haven't watched it all, but I watched a clip with Jim Hamilton and Ronan O'Gara to talk about him. And it's just like, yeah, he's special. He's very special. And I think he was so good back. This was 2018 I played with him. And you could tell that he was next level.
What's he like? What's he like as a bloke? Does he speak much English, or did he manage to connect with him?
To be fair, like he always spoke in the morning. You know, he's always happy to greet you. You know, and he from what I've found then, and you know what I've heard recently, that he's still as quiet and as humble as ever.
Yeah, I can imagine. Hey, he always looks so calm, and like nothing ever seems to faze him at all.
Yeah,
very rarely shows much emotion.
100%. Yeah, he'll win the Six Nations on Saturday, and he'll be I don't know, like having a McDonald's on a Sunday or something. Chill, very, very chill bloke.
Complete opposite to Bigger, like total contrasts.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. Best piece of advice you have for a Waterlad listener? I ask everyone this question, and looking forward to yours, mate. This has been, I've enjoyed this today.
I think enjoy it. Yeah, you have to enjoy it. I think, you know, people say that you've got to be serious at times. You've got to work hard because in most things in life, but you got to take a minute to just sit back and be like, this ain't a bad life, is it? It doesn't last forever.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It will soon change, and you know, you'll be watching the next World Cup with the next players and people that are, you know, doing well. I think just to enjoy it, enjoy the moment, stay in it, and yeah, just be pretty humble, be nice. You know what I mean? I think you've got to treat people how you want to be treated.
Yeah, mate, and you obviously do that because you are an absolute true lad. And mate, appreciate you coming on the podcast, sharing your story. What a story it's been! Like, that's an incredible journey, very unique to most rugby players these days who are straight into like professional footy from 19 and talk about the injuries and stuff. But your journey is very unique, and it's awesome to see you
different
on the biggest stage in world rugby at the moment, doing great things. So appreciate you coming on, mate.
Top man, thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's been awesome.
And if you do need that distribution, mate, send it to Waterlad and we will distribute from my garage. Mate. We're taking over worldwide.
We'll fire it on. You're top man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, mate. Thanks for tuning into the episode. Since you've made it all the way to the end, I'm hoping that you've enjoyed the episode. And if you have, there's just a couple of things you can do to help me out. First is to subscribe or to follow to whatever platform you're listening to it on. That roughly takes 1 second. Secondly, if you could give it a 5-star review, that roughly takes 2 seconds. That helps out massively too. And thirdly, you could write a wonderful review about the podcast if you've got a spare minute or two. That also helps out more than you know. Lastly, I forgot about this one, but if you really want to help out, go and get yourself some Waterlad merch at waterlad.com and help spread the love. Appreciate it.